from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 301, recorded live Tuesday, January 10th, 2012. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Zach Owens about learning to speak another language.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today, on the phone from... Where are you, Zach?
I'm in Beijing.
On the phone from Beijing, Zach Owens is going to talk to me about learning languages. But not just learning C-sharp and VB and Pascal and all that kind of stuff, but learning foreign languages. When I first heard about your story and hang out with you a couple times at Qdoba, I was absolutely fascinated because I've spent a lot of time studying foreign languages, but ultimately I've never lived overseas, which effectively makes me a bit of a poser when it comes to speaking other languages. Would you mind?
No, I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. So what languages do you speak?
I have some conversational stuff in a couple of different languages, but mostly I'm finding if you don't use them, you just end up with some fun phrases. You know what I mean? Like I went out with an Ethiopian girl 10 years ago for a couple of years, and I spoke Ethiopian like maybe a 5-year-old. You know, I was well on my way, and then we broke up, and then, you know, it's 50 phrases and I can read it, but that doesn't make you fluent at all. And now it's more of I get to use it when I go to a restaurant. So it makes me feel sad.
I speak Chinese like a 5-year-old, if that makes you feel any better. And I've lived in China for about a year, so.
Well, but I meet lots of people who have lived in, you know, country of choice for a year, 2 years, 3 years. And you'll meet people who've lived in the U.S. for 20 years and haven't learned English. So there are people who, like, I met a person who lived in Malaysia for 5 years and, like, didn't speak a word of Malaysian. All they did was hang out with the locals. And that's not your style.
That's not my style. That's a recipe for a sheltered life in another country.
So grew up where?
So I grew up in the U.S., mostly in Michigan, but bounced around to a lot of different places, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico. I moved to Seattle to work for Microsoft. I lived in Maui before that for a few years. So kind of a like adventure. I lived in Spain for a little while as well. So,
yep. And if I remember correctly, when you went to Spain, did you take language classes? You actually found a tutor?
So when I went to Spain, it was actually my first year of college, and the excuse was to actually go study Spanish. So I was there for 6 months studying Spanish and training to race bicycles, and I ended up actually getting a bachelor's degree in computer science and in Spanish. So no
Very
excuse
cool.
not to speak Spanish.
Yeah, indeed. And then you, when I tell people about you, I say, well, yeah, well, he lived in Spain. And he said, well, I'm done with Spain for a while and I'll go somewhere else. When did you have the opportunity to move to China? And when did you decide that you would stick around there more than just a couple of months?
Sure. So Microsoft, one of the really cool things about it is it's a global company. So there's this program that they have for exchange between China and Microsoft headquarters. So there's 3 to 6 month rotation programs. And I convinced my managers at the time to let me come to China for a 6 month rotation. And pretty much the first week I was here, I was thinking of ways to find out how to stay because I knew I loved it. So now I actually work for the Microsoft China subsidiary in DPE, in the developer and platform evangelism group, sort of focused on driving cloud computing in China, and no real plans to leave. I love it here.
So you knew you didn't speak Chinese when you moved there, and you knew you'd be working though. I mean, are you speaking 5-year-old child Chinese in your job, or are you speaking English most of the time, or a little both?
So at work, so especially in the sales and marketing part of what's happening in China, we've got engineering out here and we've got sales and marketing. So, engineering is much more of an English speaking culture, even though most people are Chinese, whereas sales and marketing is pretty hardcore sort of Chinese culture, Chinese language. Mm-hmm. I'm the only, foreigner or the only non-Chinese, native speaker, in our division out here. So, Most meetings are in Chinese. All of our all hands or whatever it is are in Chinese. So I have to pick up from the conversations. And at this point, I pick up, you know, over 50%, maybe 50 to 80% of what's going on. But usually when I talk, it will be in English. So I can have basic conversations with people about sort of life and like kind of what's going on and over the weekend and the fundamentals. But once it gets deeper than sort of that surface level, I still can't express myself very articulately.
Mm-hmm. And this is after 12 months?
Probably like 14 months now. And I've been, doing one-on-one with a language teacher anywhere between 1 to 5 days a week.
And yeah, and that was where I wanted to kind of dig into that. How does that process work? Because I understand that, you know, when you're learning a programming language, you know, it's more common to lock yourself in a room with a problem and a language book and kind of bang it out and figure it out. Although that's been traditionally more and more you see people doing peer programming to learn a programming language or a grammar. But we know well that learning a language and a culture, you've got to go out and you've got to use it. What made you decide to sit down with this tutor?
Well, so I think the interesting, I mean, especially in the context of your audience, and really this is where you and I started making some connections on the potential to do a show on this, is I think there are some real similarities to learning a programming language and learning a spoken language. So I love programming. I'm a developer. I've learned a number of different languages, and there are some real similarities. I mean, you point out the differences in that with a programming language, you can lock yourself in a room and just start banging out a problem and you figure out how to get it done. Whereas a language, you need sort of more of a foundation. But I also believe that to really learn a language, it's much of the same approach in terms of you get a foundation. I mean, even generally, if I'm learning a new programming language, I will spend some time reading some tutorials, writing some simple apps to sort of figure out how the thing works before going and jumping into a bigger project. Mm-hmm. I think a language is the same thing, like getting the fundamentals, getting just a base understanding. And then the thing that's really similar is that you have to just jump in and start doing it to really learn it. So even though I didn't speak any Chinese when I got here, because I didn't have a big planning stage of actually coming out here, I mean, after I took 3 or 4 classes and I knew how to say hello and a couple of basic phrases, I just started using them all the time. And I think there are certain language learners who are quite cautious about actually trying to use it because they're going to get it wrong. Whereas I think if you apply the same approach as really learning a new programming language and going for it, you can really start to make progress. And so that's where I think there's a big overlap in the two. At least in that aspect.
Wouldn't you say, though, that putting yourself out there is such a difficult thing to do? I mean, certainly, you know, I've, you know, tried to teach myself Ruby, but I don't know idiomatic Ruby by any means. To go out and ask questions is a really difficult thing. To go out and write Ruby and talk to people who write Ruby and write it wrong and blog about it wrong would be really, really challenging. And the same is the case if you're going to go off and start talking Chinese to native Chinese, especially at work. I mean, how do you get over that sounding like a total idiot?
Well, I guess the thing in both of those contexts that I think is probably the potential for a saving grace is modesty and humility. It's like, I know my Chinese isn't great. I know it's bad. I know I'm not good at programming Ruby, and I'm not going to try and go sound like a Ruby expert, but I will get up there and admit the fact that I'm not an expert in this technology and this, but here's my potential thoughts and, you know, let's have a conversation and correct me when I'm wrong. And I'm here to learn from you. So I think a similar approach to trying to speak a language goes a long way. I think people, different countries are different on this, but in generally, I think people love it when they see that you're trying to speak their language, whether you're, you know, the Microsoft guy coming into a web community that people thought you were irrelevant, or whether you are a Westerner new to China and just trying to get along. As long as you're kind of humble and come across in the right way, I think that's the key thing.
Someone said that the way that you know you really don't know a language is if you try to order food in that language and the waiter immediately switches to English. It's just such a slap in the face. You know what I mean? I always feel like that if I order at a Mexican restaurant and I'm feeling like particularly good about my accent that day and I bust out something in Spanish and the guy's like, really?
So I hear you. My perspective on that one, from what I've experienced in China in particular, is depending where you're at, like what part of the country and how comfortable the people who are you're talking to are with English versus with Chinese. So mm-hmm. I find so I live in Beijing. So most foreigners in China would live in Beijing or Shanghai, and there's huge rivalries between the cities. I love them both. Shanghai is definitely much more of a westernized society and culture based on their history, very understandably, whereas Beijing is sort of the heart of culture and government and things like that. So I find in Beijing, it's much easier to learn Chinese, learn Mandarin, because you really have to use it much more so in your daily life. Compared to in Shanghai, a lot of the people that you'll interact with in restaurants and especially certain kinds of restaurants will speak English and will switch to English even once you start Chinese sometimes. But I do agree with what you're saying now, though, because when I think back more, when I go to Shanghai regularly, and when I first started going to Shanghai, I found it really difficult to speak Chinese with anyone in Shanghai because they would switch to English. Whereas now that my Chinese has come along to the point where I can have conversations with people, mm-hmm. the last few times I've gone, they haven't switched. So thanks, Scott. You just sort of made me feel a little bit better about my progress.
That's pretty awesome. Good for you. I'm glad.
Yeah. Thanks.
Now you were saying though that the sense of, being comfortable and being humble and being willing to jump in and, you know, say, hey, I don't know anything about anything, but, you know, here's a good try. That can be cute with a fruit vendor or someone you see for 20 minutes, but for someone you have to work with 40 hours a day, they may not have the patience to deal with you limping along in Chinese. Have you had any trouble where it's, hey, Zach, it's not cute anymore. You don't speak Chinese, so don't practice at work. Figure it out and come back to me when you're better? Or are they infinitely patient?
That's awesome. I love the way you say that. So,
sorry. I don't want to insult anybody, but I'm just kind of putting myself, like I'm imagining myself in that situation.
No, I love it. So, and you're right on. So I definitely don't try to speak Chinese, when I'm really trying to get a point across and when it's an inappropriate time. So there's two elements to that. One is, at work, I speak Chinese around some of the topics, just kind of like social topics, like, you know, the hellos and kind of what's going on and the social topics of a conversation, or when we go to lunch, a mix of Chinese and English. And then I also have been starting to mix in more Chinese even with my English around certain phrases that are very sort of common to use. So it's sort of blending a little bit. But I definitely don't try to speak my really poor Chinese at inappropriate times when we're dealing with real issues. So so that has an impact, though, because for me being in China, that really limits the relationships that I can build with customers and partners in particular outside of Microsoft mm-hmm. who aren't comfortable communicating in Chinese or in English. So it really is a challenge as someone in a culture where you don't speak the language well to be able to connect and know and build relationships. And especially in China, where relationships are ultra important, lots of other places they are too, but it is very important in China. So it limits what I can do here, which is really the big reason for me that I'm trying to learn Chinese so hard, is that I believe in the importance of China and sort of the future of the world. And I love China and I want to really be able to know it and to be successful here. So learning the language, I think, is really important. So yeah, I think you nailed it though. People won't be patient with me and my cute Chinese if we're in a heated discussion about anything really. So mm-hmm. yeah.
There's an American writer named David Sedaris who is great. He's a great kind of commentator and comedian, and he lives in France now. I think he grew up in, I want to say, South Carolina or something like that. And he said that he was really, I seem to remember him saying he was very frustrated when he moved to France and how all the babies spoke French so wonderfully. And he was just like, they're so smart. They speak French. You know, it's I wish I could kind of, you know, he thought that the language, the learning of French would come on its own the way that it comes to babies. Except people don't talk to foreigners the way that they talk to babies. here's the quote he says. He says, they don't hypnotize you with bright objects and repeat the same words over and over, handing out little treats when you finally say potty.
Right.
So he said,
David Sedaris.
Yeah. He would basically get jealous when he saw a baby in a bakery because he's like, that kid has it really easy. You know, I want to lie in a French crib and start from scratch and learn the language from the ground up. So instead, he ends up being this kind of spooky man child that really is like, hi, I am French speaking, learn. I want to have coffee, you. And it was so far. And I find the same thing myself when I'm trying to make myself understood. I'm feeling like if only they knew me, they would know I'm not an idiot. You know, like the barrier to the language is preventing you from putting your best self forward. And it's caused me to be really, what's the word? Really empathetic when I hear people trying to speak English to me and they say, oh, I'm so sorry for my poor English. And the first thing out of my mouth is, I'm sorry, I don't speak your language. Gosh, you're trying, right. You're doing so well.
Yeah. So I think you hit on a few interesting points there. One, that language learning when you're under, I think, six, Pat, and then once you're over six or something in that sort of age range, it's different. Like it goes into a different place of your brain. It's engraved in a different sort of way. So there's definitely just a difference in learning when you're that young versus older, apart from just the flashing, shiny objects and repeating the words in your face. So that reminds me of another related topic in that, so Rosetta Stone being sort of the leading software for language learning. So I believe their methods are based largely on an approach that is similar to language learning as a child, and that sort of repeating of things, and it's all in the native language or in the foreign language. And it's based on the similar approach to learning from a child. Whereas I used some software when I first got out here called Fluenz, like FLUENZ. And really cool, innovative company that really puts a lot of effort into just the user experience of their software and just really, really great, really well done software and really the kind of company that you want to support with just everything they're doing. So, and their approach is different and doesn't take that same style to language learning. And I found that adult language learners, you need a different approach. So, I think that's sort of an interesting side topic. And then another thing you pointed out was this sort of notion of how you come across to people you're talking to in the foreign language. And there's this guy who's sort of famous in China and for China watchers, a guy named Kaiser Guo. And so I met Kaiser at South by Southwest. He did like a Google in China talk, right? When sort of a bunch of stuff was going down between them a few years ago. And I know him in a bit. And so he does a whole podcast series, really interesting, called Seneca. And he's been a writer for magazines and articles and stuff like that. So there's this one article he wrote that talks about this very same topic, how you are a different person in your non-native language. And much of the time it is, you're a simpleton. You don't come across exactly as eloquent. Your personality is different. And he relates it, even if I can get this right, he even relates it to some people, they learn Chinese in Beijing cabs, and Beijing cab drivers are all like real local sort of Beijingers and like gummer and really sort of chew on their R's and like just a whole different kind of way you talk and sort of like slang and some foul sort of speech. And so you have these sort of really elegant English speakers that then when they start speaking Chinese, they sound like, you know, just a hardcore Beijing cabbie. And then another one that I think is even more funny is some of the foreigners here who maybe they have like a Chinese girlfriend or a wife or whatever that is. And they learn Chinese largely through that. So when, you know, they may be a super sort of macho masculine guy, but then when they start speaking Chinese, all of a sudden they're like using all of these terms that are much more feminine and sort of end up really coming off as a different personality. So it's definitely something to be empathetic when you're listening to non-native speakers, that really the way they're coming off might not be the core of who they really are. So it's good.
Yeah,
good
absolutely. Learning. If you, for example, learn, I met some kids in Southeast Asia that had learned most of their English from watching like Terminator. And they, right. You know, and it's just like, wow, we don't really talk like that, but they don't know. They're just trying. So then you might get a sense that this is a really intense kind of, you know, it's like meeting a stereotypical mobster type from the 40s or something in New York, and you realize that this is just how the kid happened to learn the language. And, you know, so you don't even know who your tutor is, right? I mean, what Chinese accent or Chinese style, or, and not just the accent, but the idiomatic speech and the tempo and the timbre of how you speak, what is that saying about you?
Exactly. It's true. That's why you have to have a lot of friends. So for me, I've got a lot of Western friends and a lot of friends here who are Chinese and speak English, but definitely you got to mix it up if you have the opportunity to live in a culture where you are there. It's not just be friends with the same people. Don't just learn Chinese from your teacher. So sort of use my study as the foundation and then use it as much as possible with different people. And You got to mix it up. And that reminds me, this guy, the Terminator movie, I met him just a few nights ago. So there's a city in China called Yantai that's by the ocean. So Yantai Dave is his name. So he's this Chinese dude who studied English, but he really liked the Cockney accent, and in particular, like sort of British gangster films. So this guy is hilarious. He sounds, and his accent is perfect. I was hanging out with him the other night with a bunch of other English guys and one dude who was actually Cockney, and they just sounded the exact same. And Cockney Dave, he just like comes off like a pure English gangster. It's awesome. So. Yeah, if you tune it right, you can really sort of shape the person that you want to be if you really put some conscious effort into it.
Now, how much time do you spend thinking about language? You're 14 months into it. You're probably, would you say you're conversationally fluent in Chinese? What level would you put you on? You're comfortable, right? You're certainly, you could go to Chinatown in San Francisco and impress a lot of people, I'm sure.
I mean, I guess it's to the point I've gone through phases where I've, you know, studied 5 days a week and done my homework and really been hardcore and felt like I was progressing. And then there have been phases where other priorities, you know, for a month or two at a time took hold and wasn't studying a lot and things like that. So, so it goes in sort of ebbs and flows like that. But at this point, I would say I'm comfortable to get around and to have, you know, general kind of basic conversations. Now when I meet customers and partners, if I'm doing presentations and things like that, I've got to do them in English, but I can do my intro in Chinese. And when we have lunch, I can talk to them about sports and friends and family and where I'm from and things like that in Chinese. So, you know, it's getting better every day. Yue la yue hao, you'd say in Chinese. Yeah. So well, one thing I'd say that's what's
sorry.
That?
I was going to say, so you touch on kind of the direction I was going, which is you say that there are days or months or periods of time where you're like, okay, I'm studying, I'm hardcore, I'm moving. It's like, you know, it's like when you're hitting the gym all the time, and then there's a plateau.
Right.
How much do you think about getting fluent? Like, how much is fluency, or at least as a reasonable amount of fluency as an adult Westerner can get? Part of the goal. So when your China experience ends, whether it's next year or when you're 50, you'll come out and you'll go, yeah, man, and I'm fluent and that's awesome. Or will it be less about the language and more about the experience?
I'd say the language is a facilitator to having the right experience for me. So the actual speaking of Chinese, it's kind of fun, but I do it because I want to be able to experience China in a deep way. And I want to be able to be successful here and be able to sort of know what's really going on. So, I'd say it's more about the experience, but that language is just so core to having the right experience, at least for me. That's why I enjoy it. It's also with Spanish. Like, I love Spain. I want to live in Spain again. I want to keep my Spanish going. And one thing right now, and this relates back to the learning as a kid or as an adult, it's kind of funny because I think as an adult, all of your extra, your additional languages kind of go to this one place in your brain. And right now, when I think of Chinese and Spanish, they both look the same in my brain. And when I speak Spanish now, sometimes I start mixing in Chinese. And to Spanish people that I'm talking to who don't know Chinese, they just, like, their head tilts and turns, and I don't even realize that I switch between the two languages. So it's kind of weird.
That's funny that you say that, because I've got a bunch of Ethiopian Amharic in my brain from 10 years ago. And I've got the books, and every couple of months I'll just kind of like go through the first five or six chapters and make sure that I've not completely lost it. But I'm also trying to learn my wife's language, and that my mother-in-law stays with us. So I've got my sons, my wife, my sister-in-law, her kids, everyone's all speaking the same language. And I'm having trouble keeping this Ndebele. It's called Ndebele. That's a Zimbabwean Bantu language. I'm having trouble keeping their language and Amharic straight. And I'll look at something and the Amharic word will come right to mind. And then I'll end up putting together a complete Zulu or Ndebele sentence with an Ethiopian direct object, like in the middle of it somewhere. And it makes total sense to me, because somehow like there's an African language center that has put all of that stuff in one place. It's almost like Americans can only have one other language. We're not allowed three.
So maybe that is true. So do you find that happens when you're writing code? Like, and does it have to do if they're like syntactically based on like, say, C++? Like, so if you're writing C# and JavaScript or PHP, they can all just sort of mix. But then if you get into something that's a whole sort of different syntactical base, then it stays separate, or do you find you can separate your programming languages pretty well?
So that's a good question, because you're saying that Chinese and Spanish are mixing in your head, and from my perspective, they have no business mixing. Like, they're not even close. Well, right. I'm mixing two African languages that both have what are called glottal stops. They have specific sounds that sound like z, z, and that sound similar, and they kind of in the same general neighborhood, you know, still 2,000 miles behind, but they're still, you know, Amharic is more Afro-Semitic and Ndebele is more Bantu. But the point is, they're at least they have some shared sounds. But I'm like, wow, how are you? So I guess what I'm saying is, I organize them in my brain by sound and by how they feel in my mouth.
Yeah.
Huh. So, but you're saying that you're mixing two languages that don't look or feel anything alike. So.
Well, yeah, they definitely aren't based on the same, like, roots. For me, they feel the same. I feel like they both have, cause in Chinese, when you write it in pinyin, in like the romanized version of it, instead of Chinese characters, you know, they're usually short words. They have a lot of vowels. I've never tried to figure out exactly why, but I swear, like, in the way I picture it in my mind, they look the exact same, and they can interchange without any problem. So
that's awesome. Do you have a sentence that you might say where you like accidentally order a burrito in Spanish, or what is it, in Chinese rather? Is there a sentence that you can think of that would be the kind of thing that you would mix up when you mix the two?
You know, being put on the spot, I don't think I could, but if I actually started to try and speak Spanish right now, I guarantee Chinese would just start mixing in. So
yeah, I hear you.
It just happens. It's really weird.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you say you're open-ended in China right now. You'll stay there until the next thing comes up.
That's my plan. If my mom hears this, she's not going to like hearing that. But, you know, I like it. I'm pretty embedded now, like, got the friend group happening here, like, feel much more like it's home. I've got my motorcycles, and just life is just feeling really comfortable. So, I mean, we'll see where life takes me. I'm not one to make huge long-range plans, but I like it. There's a lot happening here, a lot of opportunity. It's a culture where, because sort of just economically and societally, there's this huge sort of progress that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's like palpable. Like you can just feel it in the culture. I mean, there's definitely elements of culture where there's a lot of sort of concern about social welfare and about a lot of sort of issues. But in general, it's a place where things are really on the rise and you can feel it in the society. So it's really just a nice place to be in that way. So yeah, no plans to leave. It's cool. The question is, when are you going to come out here and visit?
Dude, I was there. I was there like, what was it, 8 months ago with Dame Senior.
You were. Yeah, I know, doing the
webcast.
Where
were you?
So,
where were you?
I wasn't here when you were
You were. I think you were on a business trip or something.
Yeah, it may have been.
Or maybe we crossed over Hawaii somewhere. I'm not sure.
Could have been for sure.
I will come back. I will come back. And then you will teach me more Chinese. Because the only Chinese I know, who taught me this stupid little phrase? It was a little kid. And my accent is, this is the one Chinese phrase I know. Ni shi huan, hua de bizi ma?
Bizi shi shi ma, you like, ni shi huan.
Ni shi huan, hua de bizi ma? Like, do you like my nose?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, pizza. So it's pretty common thing for Chinese to point out about Westerners in particular. So yeah, like ni shi huan means like, do you like ni is you, and then shi huan, like. And then, will the pizza, like, wo would be me, so, will the pizza. Nishuan, will the pizza ma? Yes, it's a pretty good one. You need to keep that one in the memory bank.
Well, because you never know when you might want to ask a random Chinese person if they like your nose.
Well, that is a conversation starter, like, nobody's business. You ever want to just break the ice with, someone in China, you have that phrase in your pocket and there is,
So I got that going for me. That's fantastic. Well, it's so nice to talk to you again, Zach, and I look forward to seeing you again. I'm not sure what country you'll be in, but go ahead and send me the link to these different learning programs and language programs that worked for you. I'm sure that the folks that are listening would love to learn more about this. Was it Fluence as well as Rosetta Stone?
Yeah, and Seneca, I'll send a link to that because people are just interested in China. They've got a great podcast series about sort of current events in China from a bunch of sort of old hand China watchers that I really recommend.
Can you take us out in Chinese on our show today? Can you say anything, even a children's nursery rhyme that we can just say is the Hansel Minutes introduction and extra?
I don't know. What's up?
I was going to say, how about your standard business introduction when you're giving a presentation?
Oh, wow. Well, the real typical one there would be like, Wo shi Owens, wo zai Zhongguo yi nian le, wo de Zhongwen bu tai hao, dui bu qi, wo shu yao shuo yinyu, hao ba? So that means just like, hey, I'm Zach, I'm Owens. So my last name is Owens. So Owens is my Chinese name, which has really cool meaning. And that pretty much means then, been in China for a year. My Chinese isn't that good, so I need to speak English. Cool?
So, that's awesome.
That's the easy one. I've got some more I can add if I really need to, but that one's pretty simple and flows. So
very nice. Well, thanks so much. Yeah. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. See you again next week.